Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Devin, and I'll be your host for our weekly Global Awaken Call. Welcome and thank you for joining us. The purpose of this call is really to share stories and to tell stories, stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life who inspire us through their actions to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this space. Today, our guest speaker is Nilima Bhatt. Thanks again for joining today's call. Let us start with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves. 1 minute of silence, please. Welcome again to our weekly Awaken Call. Today in conversation with Nilima Bhatt. Here is how the call works. In a few minutes, our moderator Amit will engage in a deep dialogue with our speaker Nilima. And by top of the hour, we roll into Q&A and circle of sharing where we invite all your reflections and questions. I've opened up the queue right now, so at any point, you can hit star 6 on your phone, and you'll be prompted when it's your turn to speak. You can also email us at ask@servicespace.org. Again, that is ask@servicespace.org. For all of our callers listening to streaming, you are able to complete the form, and that will also get your question or comment to us. Our call theme today is Men, Women, and Shakti Leadership, Exercising Power Regeneratively. Our speaker this week, Nilima Bhatt, believes that all anxiety arises out of feelings of powerlessness and from struggling with win-lose power over games, which trade in limited resources of false power. She coaches leaders and both men and women in how to access and invite divine feminine energy that leads to authentic power, drawing upon the whole self. How do you access deeper and more regenerative sources of power? And as I think about today's theme, Amit, the thing that comes back to me over and over is insecurities, and I have my own stories about it as well. But insecurities, and behind that, there is some kind of fear or anxiety. That's when I have had difficulty involving others in a more constructive and positive way. So I always think of a reflective mindset to look at the situation and think of ways to tap into the abundance that already is there inside of me. But just when my guards are up because of some kind of fear, it just is depriving me from that rich source that is inside. And for all of our callers, our moderator is Amit Tungrani. And I know Amit for a number of years. We have been on Awakening calls for probably about 20 or 30 by now. Amit is one of our founding members of Awakening Call Team, so one of our thought leaders. And I'm sure all of our callers have listened to his voice one time or other as our anchoring host. And so, Amit, when I think about these regenerative sources of power, I still go back to that fear. And I would still say it's a journey of really understanding and learning how to deal with it. And reflection is a big part of this process for me. What are your thoughts on today's call, and would you lead us in conversation with Nilima, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Devin, for that wonderful intro. I think, you know, when I think about feelings of when I felt powerless in my own life, you know, usually some kind of external action is happening or a catalyst that has happened, and things sort of seem spinning out of control. And it's almost like that idea when you grab sand, the harder that you grab it, the more of it spills out of your hand and you're holding on to less and less. And so I found that in my own life, you know, when if I just try to keep my hands open and just sort of go within and don't try to control the situation, but more so observe what happens, all of a sudden that anxiety starts to come down. And in essence, I will get a sense of clarity, and that clarity helps me sort of regain my power in that type of a situation. And when I think about some of the sources of that, I look at individuals in my life that have inspired me. And, you know, when I think about the divine feminine, probably the most relevant one is probably my own mother. And I think about the energy and the power that she had brought to our family, and the things that she would do that were obvious and the things she would do invisibly. And I look to her sort of for inspiration, and that sort of helped me. And sort of in that note, you know, when I think about, you know, the paradigm of this world, you know, everything is based sort of on this, you know, paternal or masculine paradigm. And the need for that feminine energy is so important, and that's sort of so perfect that we have Nilima as our guest today. And so I thought I would just sort of dive right into that and introduce her. You know, depending on who you ask, Nilima Bhatt can be described, or her biography can go in a lot of different ways. You know, she was a former corporate titan playing leadership roles in corporate communications and PR for major corporations like the ITC Hotel Group, Philips in India, ESPN Star Sports. She's an author. She's written about the journey from illness to wholeness in a book that she co-authored with her husband called My Cancer Is Me. As a healer and co-founder of Sampoorna, a wholeness practice, she helps people and groups that are seeking personal growth, conscious evolution, an expansion, as well as healing through life crisis such as an illness or a relationship breakdown, emphasizing self-understanding on the physical, vital, mental, psychic, and spiritual level. She's a certified Sivananda yoga teacher and has taken up the integral yoga of Sri Aurobindo and the mother with the central purpose of guiding individuals to union with their own truths. She's a dancer, choreographer, a facilitator, for many in the leadership world, trying to bring together the areas of business and leadership. She's a passionate advocate for women in leadership. She's often brought on as a keynote speaker and facilitator at conferences around the world. She's a very active member of the Conscious Capital Movement, and most recently her book that she's written on Shakti Leadership. You know, the aim really to show leaders how to lead from a place of service, and guiding them through experiences that identify their higher purpose and create cultures of meaning. So Nilima, thank you so much for being with us today. There's obviously a lot of ways to describe you, but I always find it nice to hear from the individuals themselves. And so I thought maybe you could start by sort of giving your own introduction on how you see yourself and how you would like to be authentically seen.
Wow, Amit, thank you. Thank you both of you, Devin and Amit, for opening this call and setting it up, and lots of thoughts buzzing in my head, but how would I describe myself? I think because of the years of inner transformation work that I have done, I think the self I identify most with and I really feel empowered by is the term yogini. A yogini is a practitioner of yoga to some level of practice and competence. And having put in many years of sadhana, I feel reasonably comfortable calling myself a yogini. It's also a aspirational title to say, okay, this is what I want to be and move towards. I'm a passionate dancer, and I think it's all about having this very wild, mystical heart that just gets lost in the dance. So a very core self is the dancer. And in my dance, I really get to the highest level of joy I have ever experienced. And in that dance, I'm able to also invite other people into that place of joy for themselves. So it becomes a very joyous and fulfilling experience when I dance. So I think the yogini and the dancer kind of is the core of it all. At the heart of my being is a profound faith. It always surprises me when I find people who do not have faith in the divine, in a higher power. Because for me, faith, it's like I was born with it. And it's my source of strength. I just stand upon it. I just have never had occasion to question it. It's such a living, immutable truth for me that there is a divine, and I have a relationship with it.
So maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about that beginning, you know, this idea of faith, and it just seems so strong within you. You know, maybe was it something that in your upbringing, in your childhood, were there certain influences that sort of filled that cup of faith within you, and that it just sort of helped you remain steadfast? And by all means, we've all come through challenges in our lives that can definitely test that faith. But it seems that, you know, regardless of what you've come across, and you've definitely, I'm sure, have gone through your set of obstacles to have been tested, remain steadfast.
So the interesting thing is, Amit, that I came from a secular background. My father was a naval officer, and the Indian Navy is very secular. We never know who our friends and neighbors are in terms of which state of India or what religion they are from or follow. So I have no religious or spiritual upbringing. And it came as a big surprise to me years later when, at the age of 32, I started seeking for answers that required a spiritual turn. But when I think about where did that faith come from, it's interesting that before I was born, my father was in the Navy, and his ship, I think it was INS Mysore, went to Pondicherry when it was still a French colony. It was in the 50s. And the Navy was asked to call on the ashram and pay their respects to the mother. Sri Aurobindo had already left the body by then. And the mother is supposed to have said, "It is my time to play tennis, so send me someone who will play tennis with me." Mm-hmm. My father was a tennis player, and so he got to go, and he got to play tennis with the mother.
And for those of the callers that are on the call, maybe you could provide a little context on who Sri Aurobindo is and the mother.
Yes. So Sri Aurobindo and his spiritual partner, who's called the mother, they are among India's greatest sages, yogis, mystics. Their ashram is in Pondicherry, in the south of India. And Sri Aurobindo was a freedom fighter and gave that up when he had a deep spiritual experience where he was told his work is to really work for humanity as a whole. And that's when he took up the practice and teaching of the integral yoga, a body of work to not just liberate the self, but it's not just enlightenment in the traditional sense of spiritual goal, but it's also transformation of the body, which is one of the lesser known aspects of their work. And the mother was called Mira Alfasa. She was born in Paris. She had parents who were Egyptian and Turkish, and she was also a very powerful spiritual master. And the two of them together created the method of integral yoga, and that body of work has spread across the world. There are centers everywhere, and it's a very beautiful inner practice, essentially, which says all life is yoga, and you have to know how to progressively turn all parts of yourself over to the divine in a step-by-step purification and surrender to the higher power. And in the integral yoga, the higher power is called Shakti, or the Divine Mother, because that power has the agency to drive change. In the divine realm, that there are essentially two principles in the one, in the whole. The Shiva is the masculine principle, which is witness and stillness and pure awareness. And the dynamic aspect of that is called Shakti, or the Divine Mother, out of whose energy all these forces arise, which then go on to create this manifestation. So everything we see around us in the creation, from subtle to gross, is coming from Shakti and contained in Shakti. So why do we work with the Divine Mother, or the Divine Feminine aspect, in the integral yoga? It's because that has the power or the agency to drive the change and the transformation needed for our consciousness to evolve, for our body to transform, for the goal of the yoga.
Beautiful. And that definitely provides a wonderful segue into your book and on Shakti leadership. And I thought perhaps that sort of gave us some nice context. And I was hoping you could sort of set the foundation also in terms of, capitalism and leadership as it's been traditionally seen, and then sort of how Shakti leadership sort of comes in and sort of turns that paradigm on its head a little bit. And then we can dive into more of the specifics.
Yes, great question. So capitalism has really got a bad rep over the years, and there have been studies that have revealed people have lost their faith in capitalism. They don't trust big business. And a group of people in the U.S. Got together and, realized that something needs to be done to reform capitalism and return it to its original values, and perhaps even evolve it to something that is more relevant and effective for these times. So my co-author, Raj Sisodia, is one of the co-founders of this movement called Conscious Capitalism, along with people like John Mackey, who is the co-founder of Whole Foods, and Kip Kindle of Container Store, and a wonderful group of thought leaders, business leaders, who see and who actually show very beautifully that business has the power to elevate humanity as a force for good, provided it is conducted in a particular way. And these four principles or four tenets have been outlined in Raj Sisodia's research, that there are these companies who seem to do very well without having put in incredible amounts of money into marketing like others do. And when he researched them to find out what makes them successful, he realized they have these four tenets. The first is they have a higher purpose beyond profit. They exist to serve the larger good. They make things better in some form or shape, and therefore they have a higher purpose. So for them, profit ensues. It's not the pursuit of profit. The second tenet is conscious leadership, that these companies seem to be run by leaders who have done some amount of inner transformation work. These are self-aware leaders. These are leaders who take responsibility for how they're showing up, how they lead. They don't let their stuff fly around, you know, that they're aware of their behaviors and the effect those behaviors have on people around them. So these are conscious leaders. They're able to have some degree of self-mastery because of some personal practice on that front. And they are also very context-aware. They know how to lead from a place of love and compassion rather than fear and punitive measures. So these are conscious leaders. The third tenet is conscious cultures. So these companies with conscious leaders and a higher purpose seem to intuitively know how to create a culture built on love and care rather than fear and win-lose competition. Most companies that we have all encountered or even shop floors we have walked into, you would sense a kind of disengagement very often, or you would sense the politics and the power games that tend to happen. The manipulative tendencies are, you know, quite out there. And yet these companies that showed up in the research, whether it's Whole Foods or Panera Bread or Costco, and the Tatas, there is an invisible net of culture which seems to hold the whole group together. And it's an enabling culture that cares and is built on love and care. Other people feel valued and they are engaged. They want to come to work. The last tenet is called stakeholder integration, where companies have mapped their value chain from the smallest vendor to the last customer and consumer. And they have taken care to make sure that everyone wins by being involved in this company. So all these people are now integrated into the success of this company. It's not just shareholder value, it's stakeholders have value and gain value by association with this company. So when the company and its leadership has taken the conscious effort to put these four pillars into practice, they outperform their competition 9-1. This was a huge shocker that when Raj went to actually understand that, okay, you know, maybe being good makes you a little less profitable. Their huge surprise, being good was hugely profitable. So that's one reason, I guess, you know, this movement has caught the attention of many people. But I'm happy to note that people are not following the movement only because of this incredible, you know, profit margin. But the kind of people who are showing up for all these conferences are genuinely good people who want to do good, who want to make an impact, who want to reform capitalism and really unleash its real potential. So that is conscious capitalism versus, you know, crony capitalism. And where does Shakti leadership come in? We described the four tenets. So one of the ones is conscious leadership. And in a way, that's the tenet that leads the other three. It's leaders who create change and drive change. So we were looking for a model for conscious leadership that would be different from leadership as usual. And we realized that many of the leadership models, tons and tons of material on leadership today, it's all invariably competency-based, values-based, or behavior-based. Very, very few go deeper than that into consciousness itself, into that inner transformation work that Awaken knows so well. But the world of business and the standard models of leadership are more behavioral. They're not really talking about that inside out.
Why is that so important?
Why is conscious to be?
That inner transformation. Why is it so important for a conscious leader to go through that? and why does that make them more effective as a leader?
Well, any kind of behavior training, classical leadership skill training, is like Band-Aid. You know, it's you think you've just made a surface change and you think that's enough. A lot of money gets spent on that kind of leadership skill training, but the research shows that it doesn't last. It doesn't really generate the long-term results that were expected from that kind of leadership training. And the realization came that to have any behavior shift, there has to have been an internal shift first, so that this behavior sits on a new ground, comes from a deeper place. And you know, as you know, in all spiritual practice, there is the understanding that we have two selves at a minimum. We have the personality or the ego self, and then we have that deeper true soul self. So if behaviors are coming from your ego, it's very hard to create any real shift with that, because the ego will continue to be invested in its own personal agenda of fear and motivated by self-interest. Whereas true leadership requires a broader inclusion. So we need behaviors that are coming from or based upon that deeper place. And you can't just train for that behavior. It just can't be a superficial training. You have to have done enough practice on whatever you call it, mindfulness, presence, centering. There are different words given to all these different practices that shift us out of our ego consciousness and into our deeper self or higher self.
So, if I'm to put myself, if I'm, say, an executive of a company and I want to see increases in productivity and I want to see more inspired workforce. And I decide to say, okay, let me give Shakti leadership training a chance. What does that look like? I mean, in terms of really diving into myself. So say I've opened myself up to now, okay, I'm open up to my transformation. What type of reflections am I going to have that I may not necessarily have in a traditional leadership course? How do I go into that depth of myself and know that I'm actually being genuine to that versus, let me just work through the course or, like you said, Band-Aid types, like surface level changes that I can maybe see in myself?
So just like I described the four tenets of conscious capitalism, we've come up with the five elements of Shakti leadership. So maybe it's best I just call them out and, right there the whole model is contained. The first element of Shakti leadership is called presence, that we need to cultivate presence. And presence is that place where you have stepped back from your head, your heart, and your gut, so which is typically where our ego self lies. So at the start of this conversation, Devan was talking about he gets stressed when he gets into fear and, insecurity comes up, and that's when you kind of lose your peace. So when we lose presence, which is that calm, still inner space within us, our true place, when we lose presence, we tend to go to one of three places. We can get to our head, where we start having something to fear and your future tripping, or with shame and guilt about the past. Or we go into our heart, which is our emotional center, and we start looking to promote ourselves. We want to be validated, liked, loved, appreciated. So right there, again, we have lost access to our own inner fullness. Or we go to our gut, where we get into this fight, flight, survival instinct, where we have something to defend. And it's like we are under attack. So when we realize that I have nothing to defend, I have nothing to promote, I have nothing to fear, then we can step back from these three centers, and it's as if we can return to that spine, you know, that ground of being where presence lies and can be accessed. So presence makes you now respond to the situation rather than react from some conditioning. So this requires cultivation, requires practice, requires inner work and training. And one of the things I'm happy to share, it's available on the Shakti Leadership website, is a presence practice. It takes a short one of 5 minutes. There's a longer one of 12 minutes. And do it daily. It's like going to the gym and building that muscle of presence. Mm. And you just learn to be more present than absent in the day. So the first element is presence. It's a master key. Everything begins from there. So the second element is called Shakti. So when you are standing in presence, it's not an inert dead state. It is a profoundly alive place which is filled with the flow of the evolutionary force itself, Shakti, which is moving you, growing you, sustaining you, regenerating your cells, you know, giving your thought energy, etc. So Shakti is something you learn to access when you are present. And invariably, when you are not present, you don't have access to Shakti. So then you're operating on ego-based power, which is this limited battery that runs out all the time and it plays all these win-lose power games. So when you are present, you get access to the second element, which is Shakti. Then begins the quest for the three capacities of wholeness, flexibility, and congruence. So wholeness is the ability to, I call it, becoming that holy family reunion. You know, you become your own parent, you become your own child, you become your own inner man and your own inner woman. And you learn how to bring all these lost parts of yourself back together and become psychologically whole. Very often we have a preference for one or the other of these four, you know. Maybe we are more, and I call it becoming the wise fool of tough love, if you become really whole. Wise is your parent self. You've got that inner parent. And at the same time, you haven't lost touch with your fool, you know, your inner child who knows how to lighten up and be innocent and make mistakes and, you know, move on. So be curious, not afraid to fail. So the wise fool and tough love is when your inner man and your inner woman, so to speak, have come together in a wonderful inner marriage. So tough is the inner man. You know how to draw your healthy boundaries. You know how to say no. And love is your inner woman who knows how to keep the heart open and include and nurture, not just yourself but others as well. So wholeness is that psychological wholeness, the third element of Shakti leadership. Mm. Fourth element is flexibility, where having become whole, you don't just play that rounded self all the time. There are different situations which require the diversity of your toolkit, you know. So there will be times that you have to flex and you have to be tough, even though that's not your preferred way to be. There will be times you have to have the ability to flex to wise, you know, or fool or love. So the ability to really flex between your masculine and your feminine selves, largely, the yin-yang balance, is a very key quality in leadership, to know what's needed and to respond accordingly and not be like a hammer for whom, you know, everything is a nail. And then the last quality is called congruence, the last element, congruence. Congruence is to say, you know, you may be whole, you may be flexible, but where are you going with all this amazing competence now? What is your dharma? Do you know your purpose? And are you on purpose? Are you congruent? So congruence is when your swabhav has been discovered, you know who you innately are, what unique combination of these forces within you are, and that you are now showing up in the world and bringing all that to the world in a particular project or life's work. That's your dharma. So when your swabhav and your swadharma line up, you become congruent. Your inner self is congruent with the work you're doing in the world. Now, when you bring these five elements together, you've really awakened all the bases of Shakti, you know, presence, power, wholeness, flexibility, congruence. But that, in a nutshell, is what it takes to be a Shakti leader, a whole person, a whole leader. And I talk about the hero's journey, which is that this power is not given to you on a platter. You have to grow up and you have to be tested. You know, you're going to have to journey, and you'll have to meet your worst fear. You will have to die in some form or shape to the old parts of yourself that don't serve you anymore. And only then can you receive the gift of your own potency.
Beautiful. You know, it's so interesting that the last part there that you said, that, you know, you're going to have to journey, you're going to have to go through the difficult, because I feel like so often with the, you know, leadership books today or, you know, workshops, like, you know, hey, do these three steps and you will be a better leader tomorrow, you know, and it's always almost seems like there's this quick fix solution why all of a sudden you're going to be this amazing inspirational leader tomorrow. But as you dove into these five elements, you can see there is so much work that an individual needs to be to truly resemble what a leader is. And it's really starting with the self. And, you know, back to that adage of, you know, be the change that you want to see to a certain extent, and cultivating these qualities that in yourself that you would hope that others will have too, so that together there's a greater consciousness and evolution. So really beautiful, really appreciate you sharing this. And I definitely, I think one thing that's always helpful is hearing inspirational examples of, you know, how some of this stuff has sort of come into effect or how people have broken through in certain areas. And I know you share some of that in your book. And so I was hoping you could share a few examples today.
Well, I think what is most real for me is my own story. And everything that is in this book has been lived personally by me. And therefore, I felt an integrity writing about it. So when my husband went through cancer at 40, and I was 35, the kids were 8 and 11, it was a huge crisis and a huge wake-up call, and it was that call to journey. You know, it was like we had our own heroic journey to make. And having to face our worst fear of having to return to India and start life from scratch again, and wonder whether Vijay will live or die, and, you know, be his caregiver through that time and hold on to my sanity and keep the children feeling secure through what was a very uncertain time. And coming into my own through all that was having to find my own presence, finding my own power, becoming my own, you know, mother, my own lover, kind of coming into that wholeness in a way without breaking the family or the marriage, at the same time creating a body of work which went on to become the Sampurna Cancer Program. So not just healed ourselves through that experience. Vijay is 55 today. He's a hale and hearty man. You know, he's someone who survived and thrived through that experience. And we created a integrative medicine program called Sampurna. I ran it in a clinical setting because everything that we learned, that I learned on the journey, I realized was something I now need to share with the world and, you know, pay it forward. And that then became the first book, My Cancer Is Me. So that hero journey I described, that there is a crisis and you're thrown into the deep end of life and you have to die in so many ways to your past. You have to face your fear. And in that process, you know, all that you learn and all that I learned and put that together, not just for my own survival and growth and that of my families, but then turn that into a program that I've made available online and in clinical settings, and offered it to the world, and worked with hundreds of cancer patients over 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that's one story.
Yeah, no, that's incredible, you know, from an individual as well who's had, family members infected by cancer. It's definitely not an easy thing to go through, whether you're the individual that has it or you're the family member supporting that person. It impacts everyone in such different ways. And, I remember reading that, Vijay had surgery, but then you guys opted to not to go the chemotherapy route and try alternative approaches to healing. And, like you said, there were so many elements just for, not just for him, but then for you guys as a family. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about, how you guys made yourself whole or feel whole through the process, and how that's been translated to the people that you've helped over the years.
So I think in the first clue I had to move in this direction was, of course, when he got diagnosed, we were in London. It was a cold winter's day, and the bottom just was, pulled out from under our feet. And for like 2 days, I was in a shock. I was in a whirl. You just think cancer equals death, and that you are somehow powerless. And there is this incredible mystery, this mysterious disease that has now taken over. And you have, you're at its mercy, that you really have no control. So luckily I called my yoga school and I said, is there any Ayurvedic treatment? Because after his surgery, we went to the doctor, and his tumor had not spread to the lymph nodes. He had two tumors in the colon that they were confined within the colon. They had not got into his lymphatic system. So in the UK, he was given the choice of taking chemo or not taking chemo for just a 2% difference. If he took chemo, he had a 28% chance of recurrence. And if he didn't take chemo, he had a 30% chance of recurrence. So it was something as small as that. And I didn't want that his body be put through all that toxicity for that 2%. So we were looking for other ways to make sure the cancer doesn't come back. What can we do if we don't take the chemo? When I was looking for Ayurvedic options, our school told us there's this Chinese doctor of Chinese medicine which seems to have very good results with different kinds of cancers, and why don't you go see him? I'd never heard of Chinese medicine, but because it was my yoga school who I really trusted giving me this reference, I went. And when Dr. Sonker looked at me, he saw Vijay and me, and he saw this huge strain on my face. The first word he said is, you must understand the body is a self-healing system, and the body creates cancerous cells on a routine basis in all our bodies in a lifetime. And yet we have an internal medicine, we have an internal doctor, that is the immune system. So at any given time, there could be germs inside you that could kill you. But we don't die. It's because we have an immune system that nature has given us, that knows how to flush disease out, including cancer. So, you're not alone. I mean, you're not at the mercy of this disease. We have to figure out what caused the immune system to break down. What caused it, and how do we repair the immune system? How do we bring it back to its optimum working condition, so that his internal doctor gets to work and, supports whatever else we are doing in terms of external medicine? That was a huge reminder to me. I had studied immunity, life sciences, biochemistry. I'd studied all this in my graduation, and I'd forgotten. And this kind of gave me hope, saying, yes, you know, we can do things as well. We don't just have to depend on external medicines. And that's where the journey to understanding holistic health and integrative medicine began. Understanding how Chinese medicine works. You know, we went back to yoga, took up the practice of Vipassana, neuro-linguistic programming. Understanding that immunity breaks down because of stress, and that stress is a multi-faceted thing. There is physical stress, but there's also emotional, mental, systemic, and spiritual stress. And if you discover what your stressors are and you know how to weed them out, then your immune system can kick back in and return you to health.
Mm. Wow. No, I appreciate you sharing that, as I'm sure many of our callers do as well. You know, I wanted to come back to the topic of leadership, because it seems that, you know, it's something, at least here in the United States, with the sort of political and social and economic environment that we're in today, in some ways there's this yearning for a certain type of leadership, and I don't mean just in the business world. You know, we take a look, you know, whether it's the level of the presidency, whether it's the level of the community, there's sort of a vacuum that sort of seems to be missing, and I'm just, you know, people trying to make sense of that. And so I was wondering if you had any thoughts to share of when there is this feeling of loss or searching, what individuals can do to maybe look to themselves to find that leadership.
So when this whole fear around Trump's presidency was happening before the election results, I sat and meditated deeply on this, and I had a very strong insight that we, in feeling the fear, or, you know, the Trump supporters feared Hillary and the Hillary supporters feared Trump, and it was basically fear on both sides, and there was no empowerment, because when you stand in fear, you have lost touch with your power, or you have given your power away. You've given your agency away. It's as if suddenly this president or that president would have the power of life over you and your life. And that's not true, because at any given moment, all we need is within us, and we have agency, we have capacities, and we can deal with each moment one breath at a time. And we have a circle of influence, and we start by being the change, and we can move through anything, no matter what. You know, Viktor Frankl's book called Man's Search for Meaning, that if someone can come out of a concentration camp and have grown from that experience and, you know, become a healer and a teacher to the world after that kind of an experience, then surely all of us can go through whatever life is going to dish out. And what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. So I had this realization that, if anything, this presidential election in the U.S. is a call to each one of us to step up into our own leadership, our self-leadership, to be the change and to design the life we would like and experience life the way that, in a way that works for us, that make meaning from even the difficult experience in a way that it serves you. You know? So this is where the whole idea of Shakti leadership and self-leadership comes in. But it's all about the power that is inside you, and that is an infinite source. No one can take that power from you. No one. It's not a power based on privilege or rank or money or something that can be taken away. It is who you essentially are, and it's infinite. So understanding leadership in a very, very different way, and also that, you know, both Hillary and Trump in a strange way represented the old leadership model, which is a very masculine model of leadership. And there's nothing wrong with it, but when it is done to the neglect of feminine energy and feminine values that bring a balance to the masculine, then the masculine model becomes a hyper-masculine model and becomes ineffective or corrupt or just gives diminishing returns. So what the world needs, what the leadership world really needs is more feminine energy and feminine values to bring balance to all the good qualities of masculine leadership. So traditional leadership, you know, is the exercise of power, but done in a way, you know, in the masculine way that would be discernment and clarity and focus and strength, which are fabulous masculine qualities. You know, focus on the outcome, getting it done. But if it's done to the neglect of compassion, empathy for the people who work with you, creativity, or the ability to include diverse mindsets, or the inability to collaborate and have fun, this whole masculine model becomes brittle and ineffective. And in our book, we talk about all the crises you see around you, whether it's the environmental crisis or political corruption or, you know, just business being greedy, just at a very basic lens of yin and yang. You know, you can diagnose this as a hyper-yang and a hypo-yin, you know. All systems that go out of balance with too much masculine and too little feminine, this is what they look like. The leadership needs to bring back feminine energy and feminine values.
So, you know, one thing that was interesting about what you said is that, you know, both, you know, Trump and Hillary, you know, went down that sort of masculine definition of leadership. And, you know, I guess, you know, I'm more interested in the sense of Hillary because I guess maybe the base assumption would be that men and women are going to generally lead differently, and women will be able to draw into that those feminine qualities because it may be more natural to them. But perhaps you're saying something different, that, you know, we've been learning one paradigm, and so men or women, regardless, need to shift to the new paradigm.
Yes, that because the patriarchy has overvalued and rewarded masculine qualities and devalued and denied feminine qualities, even women have had to man up to succeed in leadership and business and politics or, you know, all spheres. So the model of how to lead, regardless of whether you're a man or woman, has been a masculine model. That is what has been rewarded and asked for. And now we are seeing the negative consequences of that because it's been done to the neglect of the feminine. So the new model that is asked of us today is we really need to dial up the feminine pole in this. We need to dial it up, not again to, you know, diminish the masculine, because then the shoe will just go on the other foot. A hyper feminine is as risky and you know, can go as wrong as hyper masculine. Hyper feminine, for example, can be smothering and sentimental and dependent and, you know, unfocused and irrational, and all those terrible things they say about women. You know, emotional.
Yeah, no, well, definitely can see the value of having it come sort of finding the balance between the two. And I guess, do you see any leaders out there today that do represent that balance that, you know, that we can sort of draw inspiration from?
So I think the Dalai Lama is a wonderful example of someone who is a man and yet has extremely wonderful feminine energy. And yet he cannot be a leader of his people without also having very good masculine balance internally as well. Even though what one sees in the media is very much his feminine side. I think Barack Obama is a fabulous example of the Ardhanarishwar, you know, the half man, half woman kind of being that we are all evolving towards and aspiring towards. He had a lot of that. He had great empathy and inclusion, and yet you could feel he had, you know, very strong masculine energy. He's a very beautiful man. In the business world, yeah.
I was going to say, any women that come to mind?
You know, Arianna Huffington, what we describe in Shakti leadership is the ideal that we're all aspiring towards. And different leaders will have, honed the different five elements to different degrees. So I'm not saying all these people have perfected all five elements, right? All of us have work to do and our work's in progress. So I think someone like an Arianna Huffington has a wonderful feminine side, but clearly she would not have, you know, succeeded in this man's world, you know, in the world of technology, media, publishing, without a very strong masculine side as well. Michelle Obama. I think of Michelle Obama as very much someone who is a Shakti leader in the making. Bill Gates, Melinda Gates is someone who is also, when I've heard her speak, Sheryl Sandberg, written Lean In. So all of these people are showing both sides to some extent, and they're not overextended in one to the neglect of the other.
Yeah, that balance just seems so important. Nilima, I want to continue our conversation, but I also want to make sure that, you know, we have callers that have dialed in, and in case they have any questions, as well as, people who may be submitting online. So, Devin, do you want to just open up the phone lines?
Sure. Amit, thank you so much. And such an empowering and enlightening conversation. So, and I would love for you to continue on this a little bit longer as well, maybe if we have time. In the meantime, for all of our callers, if you'd like to share a thought or if you have a question to ask our speaker today, Nilima, you're welcome to press *6 on your phone, and that will get you in the call queue. So again, when you press *6 on your phone, it will get you in the call queue. Yeah, and then I'll open the queue for you, and you'll be able to ask the question. If you'd like to email us the question, the email address is askask@servicespace.org. And for all of our callers listening on live streaming, a online form is available for you right there on the streaming page. And so when you complete that, we will get an email and we'll be happy to share your thought or ask your question as well. And so when I think about this, Amit and Nilima, am I understanding it accurately, Nilima, when you say masculine energy, it's like make things happen, be a driver, set the schedules and move things and make things happen,
yes.
Basically. Where feminine energy is about understanding the purpose, tune into that, be sensitive to people around you, have compassion, And so that way there is a balance between making things happen, but then also at the same time cultivating a space where everyone is really nurtured, and so it's more holistic, more wholesomeness experience, probably, right?
Yes, that's nicely paraphrased. I also wanted to point out that when we use the word Shakti, Shakti is like the source energy. It's the source power. And just like the mother has the ability to create both a boy and a girl child, the masculine and feminine energy that flows out of Shakti is like the child of Shakti. So you need both a masculine energy and feminine energy. So there can be effectively a Shakti that feels masculine, and there is a Shakti that feels feminine. And you need both. You need to leverage both to really unlock and unleash your whole Shakti. Otherwise,
right,
it's as
right.
if you're operating on a battery with only one pole. You know, you need both the poles to get the current to flow.
Yeah,
it makes sense. It makes sense, and I've experienced this quite a bit here in the U.S. And maybe Amit, you can share your thought on that as well. But we are conditioned to—I shouldn't say conditioned—but there has been a time, I would say, last 40, 50 years, where in the individualistic goals and really aggressive mindset is perceived as power. And if you show your emotions, if you show your vulnerability, it is interpreted sometimes as a weakness. And that's where I think the ego comes in a play, in that, like, OMG, I don't want to come across weak at all. And so the whole masculine energy, like the way you're putting it, Nilema, just takes you over, and it's actually so gripping. I mean, sometimes it's hard to go away from it. And it's so enlightening to just think about, like, way of thinking of energy, the Shakti, as like both the nurture and the driving force both. So it's like it's not only one or the other, it's both, and the both are required.
Yes,
and
in fact, I talk about power very a lot in this book is this whole game we see in the world is about who's in power, and everyone's, you know, jostling for power, and it's actually the false power that they're all trying to steal from each other. It's a win-lose game. It's a zero-sum game, you know. Someone has to lose for someone to win. And I realized that, especially with the integral yoga and, you know, the teachings of Mother in Sri Aurobindo that I have been with for so many years, that we talk about this other power, which is Shakti, and it is infinite. It's available for everyone. You just have to earn it, and you have to use it responsibly. But no one has to lose for you to be empowered. And there's enough for everyone. There's enough for everyone. So why are we leading with either half our power, which is our masculine power, or worse, why are we leading with ego-based power when we have access to, you know, the whole ocean?
The whole ocean,
you know,
I love it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking, you know, we're going to be sending all of our callers, you know, a link, obviously, to your website and to the book after our call. But, you know, one thing I thought that might be of interest to those of you that are listening in is that, you know, as part of Service Space, we have the KindSpring website, and, you know, we run our various challenges, whether it's on kindness challenge or a mindfulness challenge. And Nilima is getting ready to run a 21-day Shakti challenge. And so, Nilima, I was hoping you could maybe sort of set the stage for that, and when it starts, and kind of your thoughts behind it, what someone might expect if they were to do the challenge.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, Amit. I'm really excited about this. I was so happy when Nipun suggested it. The 21-day Shakti Leadership Challenge will kick off on the 21st of February, which happens to be my teacher's birthday, the mother's birthday. So this is as our offering to her. It'll go on for 21 days, which means it'll also go over the 8th of March. So 8th of March is International Women's Day. And we've been inspired to say this work of Shakti Leadership is a fabulous way to achieve gender reconciliation, where we really need to get over the battle of the sexes, and we need to have the whole man and the whole woman show up and in service of the world at this time, you know, instead of cancel each other out. So February is also the month of Valentine, and, you know, love is the big theme. So in a very intuitive way, through some very deep meditation as a group, we came up with the idea that the time has come to launch a movement called Rise in Love. That normally we fall in love, and fall effectively means that you kind of become less than who you are. And actually love is something that can really make us the best of who we are. We can rise. We can rise above our pettiness and our selfishness, and we can actually come into our fullness through love if we know how to. So the 21-day Shakti Leadership Challenge is going to take you step by step through the 5 elements of Shakti Leadership, through the 12 qualities that are described in the mother's symbol, which are universal human qualities, you know, sincerity, humility, gratitude, perseverance, aspiration, receptivity, progress, courage, goodness, generosity, equality, peace. Beautiful qualities that we can take up one day at a time, and there will be practices, reflections that are going to invite you to really try it on for size, each of these qualities over 21 days. Try them on for size, practice them, commit to them, see what you can dial up or dial down, and really, you know, engage these qualities. And hopefully that when you come into that kind of wholeness within yourself, you'll have the ability to receive higher capacities of Shakti, which are also part of the 21-day challenge, wisdom, strength, harmony, perfection. These are qualities that, you know, as if descend upon us as grace when we have cultivated and purified our ego and our ordinary nature. So I'm really excited about running this, and we've just been putting the back end together the last few days. So I hope everyone joins. It's so aligned with Moved by Love and Kind Spring and all the wonderful things that Awaken is involved with. So I hope we can all really amplify each other.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I'm going to sign up for it right after the call. So, Nilu and Amit, we have a couple of comments and questions that have come online. The first one is from Albert Rowe, and he is in Oakland, California. And he has a question, Nilima, for you. Why separate, distinguish between feminine and masculine? Is that not also holding them as separate, and isn't that the problem? It is my feeling that we have inherited a system of duality that creates the struggle. Thank you.
Yeah, this is a very good question. And when I've thought about it in the past, I think of it as the color red and the color blue, you know. it's like saying, why do we need the red color and the blue color? Why can't we just have black, you know, one color? And diversity is part of the rasa, the beauty of the experience of life. And to create diversity, we need more than the one. And therefore, at a minimum, we need two. And it's the two who then have a way to interact in myriad of ways with each other to create 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, different possibilities for us to experience as life, as creation. So there is a purpose to polarity. There is a purpose to the unity having two aspects within it, which is called the yin and the yang, or the Shiva and the Shakti, or as in using English terms, masculine and feminine. The polarity is something also at a very practical level. When you think of a horseshoe magnet, if it weren't for the north and south poles of that horseshoe magnet, if you ran a wire through that space between the two poles, you get current because those two poles are there. If we didn't have the horseshoe magnet, in that same space, if you ran the wire, there would be no creation of electricity. So electricity is akin to the force of life, prana, you know, the life force that's needed to create and sustain things. So there is a purpose to polarity in this third dimensional reality that we experience. And it creates diversity, and diversity adds beauty and difference that can be enjoyed. It's like, you know, you like salt, but you also like sweet, you know?
Right. And it almost seems like to me, and correct me if I'm not understanding this accurately, Nilima, but it seems like masculine and feminine are two forms of energy, and they may or may not correlate directly to the gender, right? So you can be a man, but you have, and you can manifest both forms of energy. And like you said with Arianna Huffington, I mean, she is a lady, I mean, she's a woman, but then she has demonstrated masculine energy as well, because she is able to drive such a big team and she is making things happen. So it's the forms of energy, and it may or may not like map directly to gender paradigm, probably, right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. Both men and women have inside them the masculine and feminine polarity. It means capacities and energies that are complementary and different, and
right,
necessary
right.
For that difference.
Right.
Yeah, I think often
Thank
the challenge.
You. Yeah,
comes,
go ahead.
I said, I think often the challenge comes from, you know, I think we can be sometimes quick to assign a judgment to a certain quality, and so if one just says, oh well, you know, a masculine quality is okay, a doer, get something done. We automatically assign that, okay, that's a good quality, but then we don't give enough weight to the feminine qualities as well. Or there's the question that can arise, but, well, why does that have to be a masculine quality? How come getting stuff done isn't a feminine quality? So why is it categorized that way? Is that categorization even correct in the first place? And I think that oftentimes confusion or you know, disagreement can arise from even those notions in itself. I don't know, Nilima, did you have any thoughts on that?
I like to normally go back to the Chinese or the yogic duality, you know, the primal duality, that in the yin and yang, yin is considered the receptive principle and yang is the active principle. So right there, you can see that these are two mutually exclusive things, you know. Something pushes out and is active, and something turns inwards and receives and is receptive. right? At a very basic procreational, you know, physical level. And therefore, yang is the masculine and yin is the feminine because of the action of active and receptive. In the Shiva Shakti yogic tradition, you know, the idea of stillness versus movement are mutually exclusive, right? You can either be still or you can move. And that, you know, that ability to just be still and hold the anchor while the feminine swirls and flows and moves around to create. So that still self becomes the masculine. And that creative self becomes the feminine because it gives life like the woman does, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
But, you know, I like, because these, this ancient wisdom comes from a very basic primal understanding of, you know, just look at man and woman and understand at that basic level of creation and procreation, what is the active and what's the receptive? What is the creative and what is the still in that space, you know? So they kind of almost the opposite of each other, yin and yang versus Shiva and Shakti. But what it's trying to say is that there are two aspects to the one. And maybe one a better answer is, you know, don't think of it as a duality, but there it's actually a triality. That the one contains the two, and therefore the one is a reality, but so is the two contained inside it. So at any given time you can, and it's what level of chunk are you looking at? Are you looking at the level of the fullness, the one, or are you looking at the next level of chunk, which is when the one has become the two? But the one continues to exist even when the two does what it's doing and interacting with each other.
Hmm. So we have one caller and I also see one more question and that came over the online channel. So let me get to our caller right now.
Hi, my name is Pevi. I'm calling from California also, and just wanted to thank you for this beautiful conversation. It's wonderful to hear the articulation and the deep thought and the lived experience behind the framework of Shakti leadership. And in terms of a question, I wanted to know a kind of a two-part question. One is, in your own life, Nilima, how are there particular practices that that you have found helpful and that you have continued into today? And then second part of the question is, looking ahead, now that the book is out, what, you know, where is the flow of life taking you next?
Thank you, Bhavi. Thank you. To answer the first question, my practice has been a lot of body work. So I'm a dancer and a yoga teacher. So I've been teaching Hatha Yoga. I've created my own system of yoga, which has asana and pranayama and a lot of chanting and meditation. So I work with opening the heart center and connecting with the presence within. I use mantra for that, breath work. I have my own way of connecting with the heart, the forehead and the crown centers, and really engaging the whole body, breath, and mind with that higher self that comes through. I have recordings of all these meditations on my website. So if you just Google Sampurna Cellular Meditation, you'll get a series of audio tracks. So the first audio track, which says centering, is a 15-minute practice, which is my core practice of connecting with the divine self. There are many others, including the presence practice, the Maha Mantra of the presence practice, mm-hmm. which anytime I feel myself a little anxious, I remember to stop and breathe and say affirm, you know, that the reality of this moment is that I have nothing to defend, I have nothing to promote, and I have nothing to fear. The only reality of this moment is that I am here now. All I need is within me, and all I need comes to me. So that's another practice that's available on the Shakti Leadership website. If you just Google Shakti Leadership Presence Practice, you can find that. And I've done lots of things over the years, wonderful meditation teachers, spiritual guides, many different traditions, Sufi practices, Taoist practices, apart from yoga. That is my, you know, my personal work. In terms of what happens after Shakti Leadership, it's beautiful how things are unfolding. I wrote the book very much inspired from within, and it's as if this work and this message has its own direction, and I just need to show up and be in service of that call. I have been asked to join the board of an organization called Peace Through Commerce, which is about creating a matrix of peace to create sustained peace in conflict-torn environments. Another organization I'm now on the board of is called Mixer, which is the first social network for creating living life communities driven by women. So how do women gather around locally around common interest to just put our cultural net back together, which is being broken down through too much, technology and living with screens. So things like that, invitations coming up. My personal vision and dream is to set up a 9-month Shakti leadership training program that will create Shakti leaders. You know, these are like peace warriors, Shakti leaders, Shakti entrepreneurs who are going to be able to create peace through commerce and really lead change in their in their communities.
So we have a few comments that have come. One is from Michelle Rosen, and she's in Brooklyn, New York. And Ms. Isharing Nilima, that inspired by today's call, I just signed up for the 21-day challenge. So glad I learned about this today. Thank you all, Mish, New York City. And we have one more question from Jaya, and she's in Washington, D.C., and her question is for you, Nilima. It says, I'm going to read this now. Hi, Nilima. Thank you for sharing so many beautiful nuggets of wisdom. Can you share some instances in your life where you tried to practice Shakti leadership and fell short, and how you worked your way through that?
Oh, wow. So I live in this building in Mumbai, which the builder abandoned and did not create a housing society for. So we are just 7 flats and 7 families, which is not enough to create a housing society. So we are kind of stuck. We're in limbo. We have to learn how to live together as a community, pay our electricity bills, and, you know, there's a lot of work that goes on when you live in an apartment because you're linked to the rest of the block, you know, the rest of the building. And everyone is coming from very different socioeconomic backgrounds and thought and value systems. So it is, I work so hard to keep peace and harmony and get everyone to be nice to each other, be civil to each other. And at any given time, someone is angry with someone else, you know, and saying, I'm not showing up. I'm not paying my maintenance, you know. I'm not signing up for this thing that needs my signature. So it's a huge live situation for me that I go teach Shakti leadership to the world. And right here, where I live, I get to have to put it to practice, and it's not easy.
Thank you for being so candid and so vulnerable, and thank you for sharing that feminine energy to us while sharing your own experience around it, Dilima. We have one more question, and that is from Diane, and Diane is in New York as well. As an advocate for women in leadership, what is your advice to women who still have to work through the challenges of male-dominated corporate culture, where in order to move ahead, one may have to employ more masculine qualities, but in doing so, get repercussions of being labeled in an unkind way? I won't say it here, but the word or label starts with a B. I see the deep value of Shakti leadership, but how to disseminate that paradigm at an earlier age rather than corporate culture where young boys and girls are learning it before they actually become leaders for tomorrow?
Yes. So, of course, everything begins with education, and I'm hoping that all this work I do, the talks I give all over the world, that people will buy the book and, you know, start bringing it into education, into schools. But meanwhile, in the corporate world, I feel the only way women can deal with the situation is to reframe the challenge they face as a initiation, as a call to adventure, as a heroic journey, to really look at their persecutors, the so-called enemies, as their challengers, you know, just like you go into a boxing match, and if you have a good boxing partner, you raise your game. So if you find pushback in your corporate culture, then use it to become more resilient, to raise your own game, become smarter and become more flexible. So play the yin side, learn how to judo the energy and flow with it, dance with it rather than, try to fight it and get beaten down. So how to flex, how to be loved when needed, how to be foolish when needed, how to lighten up. I also say what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. So
take on that
challenge in a way that grows you. And I always say, change the company or change the company.
Mm.
Right? If you can't be the change and then find the change happen around you for the better, then we always have the choice not to accept the unacceptable and to leave and to follow what we are called to follow, and don't fear, meet your fear then, about how are you going to sustain yourself, how sometimes one just has to make those journeys into the unknown. And that's part of the whole experience of waking up, growing up, and showing up, and really coming into your fullness and your life's work. Sometimes the place is not for you, and you're meant to leave,
That's great. Well, Nilima, we have one more comment. It is from Monu Hernal from Washington, D.C., and she says, "Dear Nilima, it was always a pleasure listening to you speak and sharing your journey. I look forward to seeing you where you go next." And that's probably appropriate, that we should probably let people know that you are actually coming to the U.S. soon, right?
Yes. I will be there from the 28th of April to the 7th of June. It's a long trip, and I cover the East Coast and the West Coast. And having learned, pay it forward and the gift economy idea from Nipun and all of you at Awaken, I'm very happy to just be hosted and you know, for people to pay what they can, but just invite me and I'm happy to just share and teach and do what I do if people would like to have me. So and I'm offering myself up in this call.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. And we'll be sure to include some of that in our email to all of our listeners today. Yulima, thank you so much for being with us, for sharing so deeply, for enlightening us, you know, whether it was about conscious capitalism and the four tenets or the five elements of Shakti leadership. I think we all definitely learned quite a bit today and have some more reflection to do in the way that we can access both elements within ourselves and be a better person tomorrow. So really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Amit. And a shout out to my dear friend Monu for her last comment.
And so, Devin, do you want to take us to the closing, please?
Yeah, sure. So let's do a minute of gratitude. I mean, how grateful we are for this wonderful conversation and the stories that we shared today. And so let's have a minute of silence for our gratitude for today's call, please. Minute of silence. Thank you all. I'm going to unmute all of us together. And after that, on my count of three, all of us say out loud, on my count of three, would say, thank you, Nilima. One, two, three. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nilima.
Thank you, Nilima.
Thank you, Nilima.
Thank you.
Oh, that was so wonderful.
it was enlightening and fun, and really, I learned quite a bit from the call. And so, all of our callers, thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to having you again in our next Saturday's Global Awakening Call. Thank you again. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awakening Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.